Union Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto. It's my honor again, and by popular public demand, to have back on the show a gentleman who is truly a scholar and a national icon. I've always emphasized this is an apolitical show, so I've been asked many times, am I an FNM? Am I a PLP? I am just a Bahamian who loves this country and knows that we can do better and that I want to see better for my country and for all my countrymen and countrywomen. So this gentleman has no role in politics whatsoever. He's retired from the game, as they would say. And I'm an equal opportunist. In fact, one of my good friends, Honorable Mario Boleg, who's a Minister of Sports and Youth, has promised to come on the show and talk about youth development and other topics once the debate over the budget is over in the House of Assembly. But I have, again, in the studio, the Honorable, and I mean that in every terms, Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd. Welcome to the show again, Mr. Lloyd.
My great honor, Doctor. It's a pleasure to be with you again. Thank you so very much.
So we're here at your feet trying to garner as much information from your 70-plus decades on this earth, where you have a lot to offer young men out there, young women, the community as a whole. We want to talk about life lessons, what you've learned from successes, what you've learned from failures. Of course, we want to talk again about your very inspirational and very forthcoming, I'll use that word, book that you have. It's an international bestseller, and it's the title is Unite the Knot. Untie the Knot, Live the Life That's Been Waiting for You. So first of all, why did you write this book, Untie the Knot, Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd?
Because I lived it, Doctor. I lived the experience that I shared in the book. And for me, it was not theory, because I had my own knots, and I had to find my own way through them. And when I came out on the other side, not perfect, of course, but freer, felt a responsibility. And further, for decades, even in high school, people used to come to me with, as it were, their problems. And I developed a therapy practice in my life. I'm not a trained counselor or a psychologist or a therapist, but somehow people felt that I had a listening ear, and I do have the gift of listening. And I was presenting someone who was non-judgmental, was not condemnatory, and they would share with me their struggles. Usually it's centered around a relationship or relationships. And what I found was that they had carried with them and were carrying knots. Knots of shame, of guilt, of disappointment, of grudges, of resentment, of anger, of pain, period. And they thought by carrying these knots that they really were, as it were, punishing the other person, whether it's their parents or, you know, spouse or an ex-spouse or whomever. And I sought to assist them in realizing, first of all, that they were carrying knots and that they are those knots were hurting them. You know, it's like drinking poison and hoping that the other person will die or will be certainly affected. So I felt for some time that I wanted to share these thoughts with the wider public, not just Bahamians, because this is not unique, obviously, to Bahamians. I mean, people worldwide are carrying knots. I've traveled to many countries, and I've worked and lived in different places. And what we have here in the Bahamas as an experience of what I described earlier is precisely what people around the globe are suffering. So,
but why the name Untie the Knot? I think you've brought up a lot of your own personal experiences, and I think I can summarize. I don't know if I'm summarizing correctly, but essentially you need to heal, you need to let go, and you need to move forward, because holding on to past transgressions or tragedies or stress or bad relationships or poor decisions is not a healthy way to live your life. We only have a finite number of years on this earth. If we're going to be obsessed and compulsive about what went wrong, we're letting life live, pass us by.
Yes.
So no matter what age you are in life, whether you're 20 and hopefully you get another 60, 70 years, or whether you're 50 and hopefully you can get another 40 years, you still have decades of life left on this earth that you can live in a healthy manner, not just healthy physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
Of course.
So some of the best things that can happen to you, if you look at it and reverse it, are the most horrible things. So adversity can be one of life's greatest lessons.
Oh, yes.
So everybody needs to fail in a relationship. Everybody needs to lose money. If you're a student, everyone needs to fail an exam. A man or woman who's never experienced pain or loss is a weaker person for it. So
yes,
if success in life was easy without any treacherous pitfalls, then everyone would be successful. So
yes,
a person builds strength by being tested. So pressure builds diamonds, as they would say. So losing in life teaches us lessons that winning never can,
never will.
So when you're a winner, everybody wants to be with you. Everybody's flocking to you. Everybody's trying to get what they can get from you. But in the darkness of moments, in the greatest of trying times, in your most ultimate of failures that you can't even conceive in the moment ever overcoming, it's those who stick with you that anything from you other than to support you and love you, that's where you know who are your true friends.
Yep.
Who are those who are even... not every family member, just because they're related to you by blood or relation, or truly want the best for you. But only in those moments, maybe God gave you those moments so that you can build strength, that you can build character, and that you can see in a moment of true clarity that these are the people that you need to have around you. And those who are negative and holding you down and breaking you, you need to shed. Not everyone is supposed to be in your life forever. Some people are supposed to be in your life for a season, and you need to learn from that.
Yes, yes. So the name, Doctor, let me say that I tried many different names, release the pain, move higher. But this is the one that I eventually, with the assistance of my daughter, who is a publisher, eventually rested on, and because really it is exactly what we are. I mean, we are tied up in knots. When we have lived lives of resentment and unforgiveness and guilt and shame and grudges, and it injures the soul, you know. It doesn't destroy us, but it makes it impossible for us to live freely and to love fully and to move forward. And so untie the knot is to release this grip that this emotional pain has on you and has tied you up from being the abundant living being that God has called us to be. John 10 and 10 have come that you may have life and you may have it abundantly. You know, the woman, man, who is the Princess Margaret Hospital or some other medical facility who has a drip in both arms and maybe somewhere along the body. You know, they have life, but not the life that Jesus speaks about, the life of prosperity, of joy, peace, love, kindness, generosity, self-control, Paul speaks to in Galatians 5 and 22. So the invitation was to untie it, release it, let it go. Like you say so beautifully again, Doctor, these incidences, experiences, what we consider setbacks or, you know, disappointments have come to teach us a lesson. And like you also said, a lesson that cannot be learned by good times and winning, you know. I remember one of my mentors once told me, Father Richard Rohr, that success teaches us nothing. It's our downfall. It's our setbacks. It's those times when we are, you know, on the ground, looking up, and only God can rescue us, that we see who we truly are and how we are in need of His grace and mercy.
Every scar has a lesson. Every setback, as you said, has a deeper meaning and message. But let your failures become a fuel that drives you to success. But never let anyone have control over your happiness or your future.
Amen.
It's hard to just accept that, particularly when you're a child, whether you're 10 years old or 8 years old or 14 years old, and your grandmother and mother are telling you you never be anything in life, you're a loser like your no good father, you're born with the devil inside you. Why even think about going to college, because you'll never make it? It's hard when people who have influence on you and those who were supposed to be the ones to be your greatest supporters, your greatest shields from this kind of treachery, are the most treacherous. So when you have treachery within your own home, you're overcoming the most almost unsurmountable obstacle, but there are those who will succeed. They'll be able to get out of that unhealthy environment. And then, you know what? When they have a family, they realize, you know what? I will never be anything like my mother was to me. I will never be anything like my grandmother was to me. Right. I will never be so uncaring or evil or deceptful to anyone in my people love and respect. Obviously, I'm not going to let anybody trample over me.
Of course.
And I'll always stand up for my rights, but I'm always going to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, and I'm always going to show persons with kindness, and then you can continue to give people kindness who deserve it.
Of course.
Don't just give people kindness, and then they're going to use you and abuse you and everything else. So I've learned from those lessons.
Yes.
Some of the greatest tragedies when I even came back from residency, I can speak of evils that I didn't know were possible. In terms of the treachery that I had to deal with, I've had persons in my life, even before, persons who were supposed to love me and support me, tell me that I'm a loser. I'll never amount to anything. It was just a manner of them trying to control me. Why even go off to do surgery or urology? Because you'll never succeed. Ooh. Why even become a urologist? Because even if you came back home, you'll never have a private practice. So if I were to internalize that and let someone who tries to control other people to feel powerful, I learned that lesson. So I had to divest myself of those people. I had to walk away from those people. And those people would try to create a different narrative that I was the one that was in the wrong, or I had evil manners and everything else when it was them. And I've just, you know what, I've stayed a gentleman. And I'm stronger for it. So if people want to say you're this and you're that and everything else, I take it as a badge of honor. I'm honored that they only have so many years of their life. If they want to spend many hours of that obsessing over me and trying to tear me down, then I feel very blessed.
Oh, man.
I feel very blessed because I'm only looking up and I'm only looking forward. And the only persons I'm looking at are those people who are inspiring me. And persons who I feel are mentors.
I love the way you say that, Doctor. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So just as impactful in my life such as my parents always supporting me and pushing me into academics and trying to be a gentleman and a person and trying to uplift the community, just as my wife has inspired me to the heights of greatness I never thought possible and given me confidence and that I never thought I would ever have in myself and maybe the strongest person I've ever seen every time I've looked in the mirror. Those who were negative in my life, I've also had a very positive impact on my life. And yes, that's the way I look at it.
Absolutely.
And I've had mentors who've said that, and I don't look at it in that such the same way, but I say the greatest revenge is to live a successful and happy life.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Praise God. Yeah. Love it. Yes, love it.
So this book you say is for everyone.
Everyone, doctor.
Everyone has had to deal with something where they have to essentially, as you say, untie the knot.
Yeah. Everyone has ever felt stuck or who couldn't explain why. Everyone who has found themselves, for instance, repeating, you know, the same painful patterns. You find yourself in the same kind of relationships, having the same arguments, going over the same disappointments. You know, life seems to be a repetition. And you keep wondering, why is this happening to me? You know, well, it is for that person who smiles in the public, but, you know, suffering in private. The person who might say, yeah, I'm fine, but really hasn't been fine in years. But, you know, it's specifically for the person really who suspects that there's something more that they deserve, more to them than what they have been living. Because there is. Carl Jung and my great teacher, Dr. Joe Dispenza, always says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. The unconscious. You know, so many people go through life, doctor, just basically wandering through life, sleepwalking. They don't know themselves. They don't know their thoughts. They don't know their feelings. They never really have taken any meaningful, substantive time to look at themselves. I remember Father Richard Rohr once saying that an unreflected life is not worth living. Wow. An unreflected life is not worth living. A time to just be with themselves, to take a look and see how they are living and why they are doing what they are doing, feeling what they are feeling and thinking what they are thinking and saying what they are saying. Where is that coming from? And so that this book is for that person.
Very well said.
That person who is ready to stop calling it fate and who is, you know, taught what it is, and it's a knot. And now, that knot can be untied.
You are a man of faith. You were a Catholic. At one point, you were a deacon. You taught many years ago at St. Augustine's mm-hmm. College. God is very important in your life and is a guiding light to you. But when you, there are so many persons who have quote unquote faith and they're ready to just sit on the sidelines and say, God will provide.
Right.
God will provide me a husband.
Yeah.
God will provide me a job. God will provide me an opportunity. But I remember as my grandfather would often say, God helps those who help themselves.
Absolutely.
So you need to endeavor with the life that God gave you to make the most of that life.
Absolutely.
Obviously, God will show you the way. And showing you the way may mean putting tragedy in your life. It may mean putting horrible people in your life that do unspeakable things that you truly never deserved. But it taught you life lessons that made you, gave you character and refocused your life in a path that maybe you never thought was possible. So sometimes rock bottom is a blessing and it's not a curse. When you have experienced every form of loss, then you essentially lose that fear of failure. You can't fall any further and you've lost everything conceivable. So there's only one way up when you're at the bottom of life's barrel, quote unquote. So the same pain that is trying to break you can be the same pain that actually can build you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And doctor, I'm glad that you make mention of this about those who have essentially surrendered their life to whatever you call it, fate, or they say God. But, you know, we live in a participatory universe. You know, the book of John, the Gospel of John says, you must work the work of him who sent you while it is day, because night comes when no man can work. You know, we have been called to participate in life and to seize the moment and to make the most of our time and to accomplish the tasks that God has called us to do. We're not here just to sit in the stands and watch life as it passes by. Oh, no. Oh, no. So I used to teach my students in Yeast and LDI that if it is to be, it must be up to me. And as you said, God is here. He's going to provide the opportunity. He's going to provide the grace moments for you. But, you know, oxygen is perpetually available, but we have to suck it in through our nostrils, into our lungs. You know, the ocean is there to provide us with a teeming amount of beautiful and wonderful sea creatures, but we've got to go and fetch it. You know, our skin needs to be protected, and so on and so forth. Nobody is going to chew for you. Nobody's going to swallow for you, you know. So this is a participatory. Life is an engaging exercise, all right? And if you want to succeed, if you want to achieve, and you deserve to do so, then get up off your dusty rusty and make something and do what you ought to be doing so that you can be a contributor to the universe, a beneficial presence in God's eternal salvific plan. And so I endorse people getting up and doing. And even though there might be failures here and disappointments there, you know, the greatest tragedy is staying down when you are thrown to the ground. No, get up, dust off, wash yourself, and continue to proceed.
So we're here talking with the national Bahamian icon, Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd. We're speaking to him about life's lessons, and we're also speaking about his international bestseller, Untie the Knot, which I would say on a personal level I'm reading for the second time, and I'm learning a lot of lessons. It's a beautifully introspective read, and I congratulate you for it, and I know this is not your first book. How many books have you written, sir?
Just two. My first is my book on hope, which is my autobiography, and now this, and I've just completed my third book called The Assignment, which is, what have you come to do? What has God given you as a purpose for being here? We know what it is through how you can identify what that purpose is and what it means for you and for the communities where you live and serve and work.
Well, we all need words of inspiration, whether it's written words, whether it's in a song, whether it's in a Bible verse, or whether it comes from a mentor, or even from a movie. I will remember that it's one from the strangest of sources, but one of the Rocky movies, I think one of the greatest speeches of all time. I have an excellent memory. That's how I guess partly I was able to do surgery, but maybe I'm not saying it word for word, but I would say that the Sylvester Stallone character in one of the Rocky movies was speaking to his son, and he was trying to impart lessons that he learned. So, and as I said, it's one of the greatest speeches that I think I've ever heard. So he said, this is a Sylvester Stallone character, Rocky speaking to his son. He said that the world is not all sunshine and rainbows. The world is very mean. A very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it.
Wow.
You, me, or nobody is gonna get hit as hard as life. It's about how hard you can get it and keep moving forward. That is how winning is done. If you know how much you are worth, then go get it and get what you are worth. You got to take the hits without pointing fingers at others and blaming them that you aren't where you want to be in life. Cowards do that. And that is not you. You are better than that. And I always thought that was inspirational. And you wouldn't expect that from a Rocky movie. But life, Life can knock you down.
Oh, yeah, and it will.
Yeah, for those who like cricket, they can knock you for six. Yes. So it's those, you take the hits, you take the hurricane, you take the tornadoes, and you keep going. We talk about stress, and what I don't agree with, and what a lot of society, a lot of older persons will say, avoid stress.
Yes.
Stress is not healthy. But I look at it from a different perspective. I think stress is one of the greatest gifts and opportunities in life. So
yes,
they're always going to be, society says, avoid stress. It's unhealthy. Avoid it at all costs. But most certainly you need to avoid, as I mentioned earlier, negative people, negative thoughts, negativity in general. But stress in the form of challenges, in the form of climbing a mountain, overcoming an obstacle, is a hidden gift in life. If stress was so negative, then why are some of the most successful persons in this world, some of the most successful persons in history, those who had to deal with more stress than any one of us? It built character in them, and it fueled them. So stress is not the problem. It's how you react to it.
Right.
Are you going to react positively, or are you going to react negatively? Are you going to seek solace in the bottle of a bottle,
yes,
or are you going to thrive and learn from your mistakes and endeavor and be the best version of yourself? So when you start a business, what creates success? But the stress. When you go to the gym, what builds muscle? But the stress you put on the muscle.
Right.
So when you learn a new skill, what builds confidence in learning that skill, with dealing with that skill, but stress.
Yep.
So facing stress and overcoming it, all that just builds in all of us strength and character. And you need to be able to live with discomfort. That drives you. You have to live with discomfort. Residency, in particularly for surgery, is probably one of the most grueling ordeals on earth. I had to go through, it's for surgery, it's 5 years, and that's after you do undergraduate, after you do medical school, after you do internship. You then got to super specialize for 5 years. Fellowship, when you super specialize, is another 2 years. So we're talking 7 years of grueling hell. And what drove me is stress. And why? Because now I know that if they call me 3 o'clock in the morning and I have had very little sleep, where I have to deal with someone on a life or death, on the razor's edge, I can deal with it because I faced it innumerable times. It was because of the stress I had to deal with that it made me stronger than I ever thought possible. I would be on call 3 days straight. I remember at one busy hospital, I had operated I was on call from Friday to Saturday, Sunday, the next morning. On that Monday, I had operated on 27 emergencies. And very few persons could even deal with that amount of stress, staying on their feet so long, having their wits about them when you've had so little sleep. But that built character. So even though I may have grueling days now and trying times and keep pushing, and I don't know, the last time, it's not the healthiest thing, was able to even have lunch. But that's nothing compared to what residency made me go through. So that built something in me. I didn't appreciate it at the time. And when you think about it now, and I've spoken to many of my surgeon colleagues, if they had to go through that again right now at this time of their life, they would never do it. I guess
that's
a lot of it.
Incredible, Doctor.
Yeah, a lot of it.
That's incredible.
So for you, and looking at the book, Untie the Knot, what did forgiveness do for you in your life, and how did it help you become the man that you are now?
It made me freer. It gave me an perspective on life that I never thought possible. At one point in my life, Doctor, I was a very angry young man. And I was angry at the people that one should love the most, my parents, my father, because I detested bitterly how he treated me growing up. I found that he thought that he didn't like me, quite honestly, and that he would whip me for just being a boy, just being curious and playful and so on. And I confronted him after college, and he stated that he was doing the best that he could. And that really opened up the aperture of my mind in recognizing for the first time my father in a way that I'd never seen him, as a man who was wounded, who was hurting, and who was living the cultural patterns that he was taught. And then I had an issue with my mother, because my mother gave me away, I thought, at 2 months old, to my paternal grandmother. And she raised me in Long Island, and I felt that she didn't want me, didn't like me. She gave me away. I eventually came to realize that, you know, this was something that she needed to do for my benefit. She wanted the best for me, and she wasn't able to provide it. Coming from Long Island, a young woman, nobody to keep me, and having to work and support herself. And so the safest thing was to allow me to be raised by someone who she knew would love me, and in fact did. And I eventually came to realize in both instances that they did what they thought were the best. And I, through my own spiritual awakening in 1982 and continuing to develop my spiritual aperture, my spiritual muscles, I found it to be quite a beautiful experience that I endured. I was raised by my grandmother, who was a doting woman on me. And I lived a privileged life as a single, an only child, you know, even though she, of course, had other children, including my father. But every her world was Jeffrey. I mean, her entire life, everything she did think and, you know, prepared and designed was all with Jeffrey Lloyd in mind. So I was blessed. But I had to come to it in a rather painful way. I mean, who wants to be angry with their parents, and who wants to have really a knot tied around their lives, you know, towards their parents? But when I came out of that experience and shared that knot, as it were, loosened it, I found myself to be in a beautiful place. I loved and enjoyed my parents endlessly following that, in gratitude, Doctor, for what they did.
We all have to definitely untie the knots within us. And what you've mentioned in terms of anger is a perpetual cycle of destruction that's passed on from one generation to another communities in the world, and Bahamas is no different. So I'm sure your father had a very angry father, and I'm sure his father was very angry and didn't know how to love.
Exactly.
And you could have perpetuated that.
Precisely.
And been an angry,
yes.
You could have been an angry husband. Mm-hmm. But by untying the knot and breaking that cycle of destruction, you can change the path for your family for multiple generations, because now your daughters know what unconditional love is all about, so they can impart that to their children,
yes,
who can then impart it to their children. But
yes,
if we continue this cycle of self-destructiveness in our society, we're having one generation worse off than the other, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, in every way, and it's leading to the downfall of our society. We need to address the pain. We need to forgive, not forget. We need to learn from our mistakes. But if we hold on to anger, if we hold on to the transgressions, those who inflicted it upon us have a power over us that we should never give anybody. And obviously, those who hurt others are hurting themselves. You need to recognize that.
Exactly.
Those who gossip, those who try to pull other persons down are, they don't want to look at positivity. They want to feel better about themselves by pulling other persons down.
Yes.
So if you're going to, in life, if someone's going to speak badly about somebody, when you turn around, they're going to be speaking badly about you. And it says a lot about that character, that person. And it also says a lot about your character if you're going to partake in what they're doing or you're going to support it. You need to just walk away, even if it means walking away from that person altogether. You spoke about your grandmother. So you've had very inspirational women in your life. You spoke in the past about two, not blood sisters, but adopted sisters who loved you like their own.
Yes.
You were blessed to have a wonderful wife who unfortunately passed away. Then God gave you a second chance with another inspiring wife in your life. So you had two chances of that. Mm-hmm. What do you think about what the saying is that the most important decision in your life is who you choose to marry, who you choose to partner with, because it can either make you or break you. It can be the most inspirational moment of your life, or it can be the most destructive force. I've known men who, in every facet of life, are exceedingly successful. Financially, in terms of friends, in terms of enjoyment, they travel the world. But when they come home, and they have that destructive force where even they may have a $10 million home and driving home in their Mercedes or their Ferrari, they have no inner peace because there's no serenity at home. All there is tension. All there is someone that they know doesn't want anything from them for what other than what they can get. And it can take years of your life just in terms of longevity from the stress of it all. But it also can take years of your life of just being unhappy and then another many years of trying to overcome that unfortunate circumstance of marrying the wrong person. So what is your opinion on the importance of marrying the right person?
Well, you know, your choice of a partner at a particular point in time, Doctor, is a reflection of who you are and where you are. Because you see life through the prism of your own experiences, filters, and so on. And most times, those filters, unless they are transmuted, are essentially shaded with pain, with guilt, with grudge, with resentment, with anger. I mean, it's just a poisonous map of reality that you are peering through. And so it is out of that you are going and you are making that choice. I've been endlessly blessed with a beautiful, loving, and caring wife of now going on 13 years. Michelle told me, we can't even believe it's been that long. It feels like time has just, you know, zipped by. You know, we just happily enjoy, I can't wait to get home. I just enjoy the company of my wife, and just a wonderful, beautiful soul, and was always inspired me and encouraged me and assisted me in being the best that I could be, and I to her. But you see, we came into each other's lives ourselves having undergone pain and have learned from our pain.
Yes.
And have enjoyed the benefit of reflection and prayer and meditation and much, much spiritual work. That we entered into a relationship. We were beings who were well on our way to wholeness and to a reflection of love and giving, self-giving, you see. So, and this is what I encourage when I did the Yeast program and other times that I have an opportunity to share into people's lives. Get to know you. I mean, make the unconscious conscious, you know. You will find the one that will satisfy you such that your home will be a place of joy, you know, of refuge, of peace and love. And it will be a season of great generosity of spirit for both of you. And that will be transmitted to your children and your family members, and to the community that you serve.
Why do you think people are afraid to forgive or even admit their error, simply just saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me?
Because we've been taught that that is a position of weakness. You know, to say I'm sorry feels like I'm saying I'm less than you, or to forgive feels like saying what you did was acceptable. Neither is true. You know, the ego does not know how to deal with the truth. It only deals in survival. And we live in a world that has confused vulnerability with weakness. But the great teachers knew that, you know, vulnerability isn't weakness. It is the birthplace of love and belonging and joy. Matthew 5:3, you know, blessed are the meek and the humble, those who know their need for God, for the kingdom of God is theirs. You know, Mother Teresa comes immediately to mind, an incredibly humble woman. Yeah. Jesus, for centuries, before. The ancient wisdom tradition said the same thing. Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the meek, you know, for they shall inherit the earth. So strength that does not need to prove itself, which is what humility is. And to say I am sorry or to say that I please forgive me is a position of strength because we all have blind spots. We all make mistakes. We all misjudge, you know. And the person who is unwilling to do so is really a person who is coming from a place of deep pain, you know. They are afraid to be exposed for the caricature of who they are. And it's really someone to whom we should offer compassion because they're hurting, and they're hurting deeply. And if not dealt with and addressed, as I said last time, if the pain is not transmuted, it will be transmitted. And you and I know, and you deal with this far more than I do, Doctor, every day, you and I know of the many, many wounded, deeply wounded, hurting souls out there who are visiting their hurt on those whom they should be loving, their children, their partners, their spouses, their loved ones, relatives, those colleagues at work. They have an unkind word. I was in the government office just the other day and, you know, engaging the lady, and she was just so rude and disrespectful and angry and impatient. And I felt sorry for her, quite honestly, because somewhere in her life, maybe earlier that day, the day before, the month before, she feels wounded that her needs not being met. She's not being acknowledged, validated. She's not being seen and respected. And as a result, she transmits that anger, that hurt, that pain onto those with whom she comes in contact. And I'm here. She is doing it to me and the others who were in the government agency. She is doing the exact same thing to. I was hoping that they would leave, so I would just say, my dear, you know, you're so wonderful. You're just beautiful. I hope that you have a great day. I wasn't going to point out to her that she's rude or anything like that, because, she would become defensive. But just to punctuate her awareness with something that is pleasant, that is loving, respectful, that would grab her attention for a moment. Well, maybe someone never ever said it to her, and now somebody hasn't said it to her in a while. They have been beating up on her. Could be someone who she loves. Could be some other customer who came into that government agency. But because she doesn't know who she is, and she's living from that unconscious state, she reacts instead of responding. You see, because when you are conscious, doctor, when you know who you are and you are deeply aware of the divine emanate, you don't have to react. You can respond. And that's the freedom that we all seek. That's the freedom that we all deserve.
Life is short. I think I have a unique perspective, as would be the case with many of my colleagues in the medical fraternity, particularly, I think, as a surgeon or as a urologist trying to combat the number one cancer in this country, which is prostate cancer, where as many as 1 in 6 men are going to get prostate cancer in the lifetime. Wow. And an estimated 120 men die every year in this country from prostate cancer. Many cases, more than all the murders for the year, more than all the motor vehicle fatalities in the year. And the crying shame that breaks my heart is, every one of those deaths is preventable, because prostate cancer, when it's diagnosed at an early stage that's organ confined, has one of the best prognoses of any cancer, where the chance of survival is nearly 100%. Wow. So that's where one of my passions, I would like to see in my lifetime, my career, that 120 go down to at least 20. So then you have at least another 100 men every single year living to see their grandchildren go down the aisle or graduate or enjoying those extra 30 years with their loved ones, their wife, enjoying retirement, contributing to society. Wow. But life is short. Stop holding on to the foolishness, essentially. Just let it go. Yeah. Life has no time to be obsessed over the negative. Learn from it. Learn from it. Obviously, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to be fooled by persons. You need to live your life with your eyes wide open. You want to trust, but only trust those who deserve your trust. So if someone is found to be untrustworthy, if someone is found to not be, have your best intentions at heart, then you need to shed them. You need to hold them at a distance. You need to protect yourself. Yes. Protect your future. One of the greatest lessons is, even if you're successful, the best lesson you can have from being successful is to do it quietly. Because there are far too many people out there who don't want to see you successful.
That's right.
So why create all the enemies? Why create all the haters? Even if your business all of a sudden is doing 10 times better this month than it was last month, be successful quietly. You don't need to announce it to the world. You don't have to be ostentatious.
Yes.
You don't need to have the Rolex. You don't need to have this. You don't have this materialism. Success doesn't need to be announced.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem with a lot of our society. You equate being ostentatious and showing materialism as actually having true success. There are no materialistic things that are going to fill an empty soul.
No, sir.
All the wealth in the world is not going to fill that void.
Right, Jesus says, well, you know, what profit is the man who gains the whole world
and loses his own forgotten soul? Yes, yeah. It's very true.
Yeah.
So, in looking at the book, are there simple exercises that one can do to help them begin the process of forgiveness?
Well, you remember earlier, Doctor? Yes, there is. There are simple exercises. You remember earlier I said begin by making the unconscious conscious. Our parents used to say, stop and think. What they essentially were saying is pay attention, which is sometimes the most difficult thing to pay. My chief primary spiritual exercise is meditation. And of course, people think it is so hard, it's so difficult. They get started on it and then they don't keep up. But actually, it's very, very simple. Just the other day, maybe a week now, CNN on its webpage had a story about 2 minutes of meditation daily changes the brain. 2 minutes.
That's remarkable.
2 minutes.
That's remarkable.
They have done a study to show that the brain begins to change after just 2 minutes. So I recommend that people find some time early in the morning before maybe, you know, the home starts to become busy. Find an empty chair, sit in it quietly. Just 5 minutes, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. Put your feet flat on the floor, your hands in your lap or wherever. Just close your eyes and turn your attention to your breathing. 5 minutes.
And I always encourage...
Go on.
No, go ahead, sorry.
You're human because your mind is going to... People are going to say, but my mind is just so... active. I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about that. Yes. And that's a good thing because you're human. Okay? But every time that you find your attention grabbed by a thought, just bring your attention back to that breath as you breathe in and as you breathe out. As you breathe in and as you breathe out. You're going to find something remarkable happening to you over time. Now, I say, this is not just some one time, do it one morning and you think that life is going to be phenomenally different and better. No, we have to stick with it. When you sit still just 5 minutes and focus on your breathing, something begins to happen that no pill, no argument, no amount of willpower can produce. The noise gets quieter, not all at once, not perfectly, but quieter. And in that quietness, something deeper begins to surface. Call it your spirit. Some call it the soul. Some call it the presence of God within you. Whatever the name is, it is real. It is yours. And it has been there all your life. And meditation doesn't create it. It just reveals it. Think about it this way, Doctor. And I could remember this when I lived on Long Island. Think of a glass of muddy water. Okay?
Yes.
And you just rest the water on the counter. Now remember, the mud is not the water. It just got mixed up with it. But if you leave that glass completely still, what happens? The mud slowly settles and the water is revealed to be clear and clean. That mud has always been sitting on top of this, or something that is pure. You know, your pain, your anger, your shame, that is the mud. But your true self is the water. Stillness is what settles the mud. Just 5 minutes every day begins to settle what has been stirred up inside you, sometimes for decades. And here is the miracle. Once you start to feel even a little that deeper, quieter, pure part of you, the things that you used to consume you begin to lose their grip. Not because you forced yourself to forgive, not because you talk yourself out of your feelings, but because you started to see from a higher place. You know, when you say stand at the bottom of a building, everything looks like a wall. But when you rise to the top floor and look out, you see the whole landscape. That's what meditation does. And I've been doing it now, Doctor, for 44 years this year. Every day.
That is amazing. Those are beautiful and truly inspiring words. I think that people in life are successful when they often follow their responsibilities and not just their passions. So I think that success creates passion far more often than passion alone creates success. Not everything in life you're going to be passionate about. Not everything in life is going to bring you enjoyment. But if you realize the greater picture that you have a responsibility, whether it's a responsibility to your family, a responsibility to yourself, a responsibility to God, the community, to your profession. Even as a surgeon, there were a lot of things that I didn't like to do in residency, but I had to do them because I knew that one day, even during residency, I have persons' lives in my hand. So that is the greatest of responsibility and the greatest of honors. So even when you have to study and to work and to operate and to always be on call, I would actually, when I had free time, I would go into the medical school and dissect cadavers. So I would be even the greatest of experts in terms of even aberrant anatomy so that I would become a better surgeon. I hated it. I hated going and smelling like formaldehyde, and I hated dissecting in the cold of night, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, being alone with 20 different dead bodies. It would freak the hell out of anybody, but I knew that in times, and those where I didn't have a passion for it, I had a responsibility because I know one day I was coming back to the Bahamas. I know that I would have persons' lives in my hand, and that I know that I could make the difference having somebody's grandmother have another 25 years with them. Or I can have somebody having a dad for their lifetime instead of losing him at the age of 8 years old. Oh. So that is a mix of passion and responsibility.
That's genius, Doctor.
But if you were to only look for what you are passionate about, the greater picture is to look for responsibility. Not everybody's going to be passionate about every aspect of their life or every aspect of their career.
And I suppose even those parts, even though that career that you generally feel passionate about, there are aspects of it, like you said, that you don't feel necessarily passionate about, but you have a responsibility for.
Before I went off to residency, I used to love sports just as anybody else. I used to follow NFL. I had my teams. I follow NBA. I used to follow a major league. Soccer and baseball. But when I had residency, all I would do was study. All I would do is I would literally volunteer to do emergency surgeries when somebody else was on call.
Really?
Just to garner that experience, because I knew that I wouldn't have that I wouldn't have that opportunity anywhere else. So the more I operated, the better I would be at my and the greater skill that I'd bring back.
Sure.
To the Bahamas. So I never even watched the Super Bowl in seven
wow.
years. I never watched one NBA game.
What?
I lost all passion. I'm slowly building it back, but I don't have the passion for those things that I once did. Even now, if I have a spare moment when I'm not spending with my family, I would use it to read journals so that I'd educate myself, so that I know what is it on the cutting edge, what is it, where are the advancements in my field. because I know that can mean all the world, that if there's a new drug that just came out 1 month ago, I might see a patient next week that that drug that the wider community might not know about if you didn't read this specific journal article and show the evidence of support and then realize that it was FDA approved, that drug may provide someone 3 years of life where there was no hope. Wow. Or even provide them a cure. So that is my passion, not novels, but reading journal articles. I've lost my passion for sports, but my passion is seeing that I can save lives, that I can improve the lives of persons, not just, it's wonderful to know that you can cure somebody of cancer. There's no greater feeling than that.
That's beautiful.
But even on the smaller level, to know that someone who had given up on life, particularly for BAME in men, where their mentality is wrapped around their ability and their prowess to have a normal erection, for someone who's given up on life, become a shell of their former self, they've lived a life of solitude, maybe they've lost relationships, to be able to determine the cause of their erectile dysfunction, treat that root cause, make them a healthier version of themselves, possibly changing the trajectory of their life from getting a stroke or heart attack 15, 20 years down the road, but then to have them to get that erection again. And I use these words playfully, but it's true. My mantra is, you can always rise again. To see a man's joy, I've seen men cry, no erections in 20 years. Wow. Whether it's first-line therapy, second-line therapy, third-line therapy, or even fourth-line therapy with a penile implant, you can always rise again. And to see the outlook on their life, the joy that they have in their life. I've had sicklers, but because of the disease itself, they developed a spontaneous erection, which is called priapism. Sometimes they, because of embarrassment, when they're 15 years old, they'll stay at home for 2 days. If you have a sustained erection for more than 4 to 6 hours, that can cause irreversible damage. So I have seen so many sicklers who have full-blown sickle cell disease that have gotten priapism that destroy their ability to ever have an erection again from the age of 14, from the age of 16. That means they'll never have a sexual life. They'll never be able to procreate and have children and have a family. To be able to find a way to get them to have erections again, that changes the very existence of their life.
Absolutely.
I've seen so many things. I've been blessed. My professor was the person who did the world's first penile transplant.
Wow.
So I always use that note for my patients. If you can have a person who had no male member, no penis, you can have a transplant, and that person went on to have 2 children.
Ooh.
And get married.
Ooh.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Absolutely.
Not only that, that person was a black man, a very dark black man, who got a transplant from a young white man who had died in a motorcycle accident. And it's a whole thing. They actually had to tattoo it so it can match his skin color and everything else. But it worked perfectly.
Beautiful.
And you can see that man was just as...
It's a new person.
A new person. A new outlook on life. Yeah. A new path for his existence. So
yeah.
Anything is possible.
Yeah.
And then also just in my profession, almost every day, if not every day, every other day, I have to give someone the diagnosis of cancer. To live with that and to see grown men cry, families break down, and to be there to comfort them on every level from acceptance to denial to guilt to anger and everything else, to be with them every step of the way and then get them through having them cancer-free is a joy and a pleasure and an honor that I know God has bestowed upon me.
Beautiful.
And I will never take that for granted. So that means that I don't have time to watch NBA games. I might just be able to see the highlights on YouTube, but instead I use that time to improve my skill, to read journal articles in urology passionately. That's what I'm going to do.
Beautiful, Doctor.
It's a small sacrifice, but there is no NBA game. There is no Super Bowl that can give me that joy than to save somebody's life or improve somebody's quality of life.
That's excellent, Doctor.
Yes.
Congratulations. And every time I come here and listen to you, I'm inspired. Thank you so much.
Another question I have in regards to your book. What's the one thing you feel that people in life are generally missing? I know that's a broad question.
For me, self-awareness. just being aware, just knowing who you are at every single moment of the day. Now, that is a gigantic undertaking. I understand that. But again, through the exercise of meditation, mindfulness, paying attention to what you're thinking, paying attention to what you're saying, paying attention to how you are reacting, paying attention to the thoughts that you have, the feelings that you have. As you begin to practice this, doctor, your life changes. You talk about the transformation in the life of an individual who had previously had dysfunction in his member, male, and who's now been able to regain or has achieved a level of just complete. Somebody, for instance, of a woman who may have had problems with, leakages throughout her life because of, carriage, pregnancy, and she has now been cured of that, and relations with her husband or her partner has now been restored, and the joy you find. When people come to a realization that they are who they are in God and God in them, and that they are consciously aware of themselves in all things, all situations, that they feel a freedom, a lightness, an awareness that nothing, doctor, can ever replace, ever, ever. I speak of myself, speak of my wife. We meditate every day, every blessed day, and it is a joy. There was a time when I was doing it because it was told to me to do it when I first came into this experience, and now I do it because it's such a joy to come into the experience of oneself from the highest plane of existence. And so you are almost unassailable. Nothing rocks you, shakes you. You understand the context of the life that you have been given to live in a way that's indescribable. Words cannot explain. And I wish that for everybody. And that benefit is available to everybody, doctor. But you, like I said earlier, and you've also said, life is about participation. Sitting on the sideline will never get it. You cannot wait for the birds in the sky to bring you the food. You're going to have to make a living. And that's what our foreparents did. They did it wonderfully, and they handed it on to us. And in some instances, we have dropped the ball. My mother sat in the afternoons regularly quiet and insisted that I be quiet so that she can spend time with herself. And that's what she did. And she was a woman of incredible peace and presence.
And you mentioned something even related to urology, talking about women leaking urine. And that brought up a very monumental moment in my career. You can never underestimate the small acts of kindness and the ripple effect. There was a lady who literally, I remember the story, 26 years. This woman had literally become a recluse. She had lost her job because she essentially had to urinate every 15 minutes, no matter what. She would go around dehydrated, never be able to drive in traffic, wearing adult diapers, always having that low self-esteem, perceiving herself as always smelling like urine, sitting at the back of the church because she had to go to the bathroom so often. Ooh. Never interacting with anyone or going out into public. And I had come back, and a lot of things I had started putting in what we call TOT or TVT tapes for stress incontinence. But I also started putting Botox into the bladder. And it literally takes you 10 minutes. It's a minimally invasive procedure. I have to do it for women on their lunch hour. And I saw this woman maybe 4 months after I put Botox in her bladder. I had seen her after the procedure. She was happy. And she was ecstatic that, you know what, she was able to go 4 to 6 hours without having to urinate. She was able to have a good night's sleep because she didn't have to wake up in the night or wake up in a puddle of urine. And she said she had a new relationship. She was engaged to get married. She had gotten a new job. She was participating in the church. So you never know what small acts of kindness or small acts can change somebody's life. So always be kind.
Absolutely, doctor.
So the book, Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd, is Untie the Knot.
Untie the Knots.
Where can someone purchase this book?
It's online at Amazon.com, of course, and we will have copies available in the bookstores in about 2 weeks.
Very inspirational to me. Yeah. And are there any closing remarks?
Well, just invite people to get involved and get involved with learning about yourself and becoming who you are. And I say that, becoming who you are, people will say, well, I know who I am. Well, sit with yourself 5 minutes every day and you will realize that there's much more to you than you could ever possibly realize. Just 5 minutes, but make sure it's every day. Five minutes.
That is very well said. Now simply say, be good to others and do not forget, be good to yourself.
Yes.
Have a very safe week, Bahamas, and thank you very much for tuning in to The Urologist Speaks. This is urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I was very pleased, and it's my greatest pleasure to have the Honorable Mr. Jeffrey Lloyd speaking about his book, which is an international bestseller, Untie the Knot, which is available readily on Amazon and soon to be readily available in Bahamian bookstores.
Yes, Doctor. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Thank you.
It's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
You will find he'll help you solve your problems on 96.9.